All right, my name's Joel. I hail from Microsoft up in the Pacific Northwest. You might have heard of us here and there. Today, what I want to do is recap, because unfortunately there's not enough time to get into a huge amount of detail, but at SIGGRAPH this past summer, we launched a solution for being able to do burst rendering into Azure in a mechanism that's approved by major studios. And so even though I can't talk about which exact studio, you know, there are only six that you have to guess from, so more than welcome to shout out the name if you know. There's a set of security processes that has to be met in order to post top tier content. You think of your major tentpole, blockbuster releases. Obviously, you don't want anything getting out before it's supposed to get out. So having the right security processes around those pre-production assets is critical, not only for protecting that property, but also appropriately using cloud resources. We'll take a quick spin. Mesa will be making the content available for download later, so don't feel like you have to try to take notes or anything like that, because there's kind of a lot. So,
could you just take a look at a very brief intro of Microsoft Azure also?
I probably should do that, shouldn't I? How many are familiar just with public cloud in general, the concept around? How many are current Amazon users? maybe I can convert everybody. So Azure is Microsoft's public cloud platform, and there are a number of variants of it. So there's about 200 or so different services that make up the Azure platform. It's everything from compute, storage, networking, cognitive and AI, media streaming, rendering, you name it, there's undoubtedly a service for it. And it runs on a variety of hardware solutions. So depending on the type of workload that you want to run, it might be a CPU-based workload, it could leverage GPUs in the cloud, it could even leverage deep learning, custom programmable FPGAs in a data center. Depending on what you're doing, here obviously we're talking about visual effects and doing batch processing for 3D rendering, but if you're doing genomics research, if you're doing atmospheric modeling, if you're doing deep learning, there will be mechanisms within the cloud that allow you to build large-scale, high-capacity environments to take advantage of that. So just like you're familiar with in AWS, there's the full collection of services and networking and options for the different types of workloads that you can generate. Only it's Microsoft, and I think. To answer the question of why Azure instead of AWS, I think one of the biggest differentiators that we have is that end-to-end ecosystem. The fact that it can go from the desktop, logging in through Active Directory, all the way through to the back-end infrastructure that could be Windows servers, could be Linux, could be serverless, container computing, could be, it can be anything. That desktop and that device to cloud environment is really only one company that can do it, this is it. So hopefully that gives you the overview of Azure. So let's get into. Great, this is not going to work. Also, sorry. So just a brief introduction. I'm on the board of directors for the CDSA. CDSA is part of Mesa, and Mesa is obviously running the heads of that. And what we do is we work with the industry to set content security standards, and then there's an audit program and certification that goes along with that. And then we work with the industry on refining these requirements and helping content owners implement them in a way that's going to benefit the community at large. So. We'll take a quick start just by looking at what does on-premise security look like, and what does it mean to be connected? you know, one of the things that we'll talk about is whether or not, you know, having an air gap environment is actually any more secure. And then we'll look at, you know, a couple of the different models. There's hybrid, of course, where you still have a fair amount of on-premise infrastructure that you've invested in and you still want to use. Or you can go fully cloud native. And the security models are basically the same, but there are just a few considerations to think about when, you know, as you move from being fully, you know, isolated in your own environment versus going and being completely cloud native. So what's driving this? Well, I think, you know, probably the biggest thing is going to be content. The fact that, you know, in the old days, you know, last year, everything, you know, is HD. So, you know, a lot of on-prem render farms are, you know, fairly well able to handle doing, you know, they could probably even handle near real-time rendering for HD content. But, you know, you walk into Walmart, into Costco, everything's 4K now. You know, immersive reality, so now you've got, you know, a 360 degree field of view. You're, you know, HDR, which adds, you know, 15% additional bandwidth on the signal. You know, so, you know, as things progress and you're getting to high frame rates, high resolution content, and it's not going to stop because then, you know, the next Japan Olympics are going to be broadcast in 8K. So we're very quickly moving into a region or a realm where, you know, local, you know, your local on-premise equipment is not going to be able to handle the load of managing, storing, generating this kind of content. And really, other than continuing to spend, you know, millions of dollars on hardware infrastructure to do this within your own data center, cloud is really going to be the only way to handle this next generation of content.
Hey, Joel, is HDR heavier than 8K? Is it more resolute than 8K?
No, so HDR is more about the color gamut, so it's basically the color depth of an image as opposed to resolution. I think it's the Ultra HD standard includes HDR with 4K. So that would be a slightly higher bandwidth signal than straight 4K. So it depends on which standard you're looking at, but pretty much, you know, like the Blu-ray, the 4K Blu-rays that I've been seeing on shelves now, if it's 4K, it's also HDR. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see one without the other. And I think the HDR standard also includes the audio codec. So it's the immersive surround sound, but then, you know, then Atmos is like the next level up of standard. And so every little bit starts adding. And that's, you know, that's more compute time, more storage, more, you know, it's more everything. But, you know, what we're seeing happen is it's an interesting model of, you know, creatives and content owners want to be able to do more. So there's this huge content race for, you know, whether it's online services or, you know, theatrical release, and there's that need to just do more faster. And you can either take longer, you know, do higher quality, but take longer to do it, or you can spend more to get it done faster, well, you know, hopefully not sacrifice your quality. And then, you know, we all hope that security is kind of somewhere in the mix there to make sure that things don't go pear-shaped. But now artists have this option of, well, if I can burst to the cloud, I can make all this stuff happen simultaneously. It can be massively parallel. I can, you know, I can generate 10,000 frames overnight. I can do all this stuff, and then, yeah, it doesn't matter if, you know, I go over my quota because it's the cloud, and, you know, there's an infinite amount of scale available. But when you start doing that, you've got to take into consideration what kind of environment are you bursting into, who has access to it, you know, how are you controlling what people are doing in your cloud environment, so that if an auditor comes calling, or if there's a breach, or if there's a leak, you know, can you go back and find out what happened, and you know, do you have the ability to fix the problem and recover from it? So what drives it is that there are artists everywhere, and everybody, you know, you want to have the broadest possible pool of talent that you can have. And that means, you know, you could have somebody in Bangalore, you could have an artist in Finland, you could have a post house in the US, and everybody needs to be able to come to the content. You don't want to expose it by sending disks, sending hard drives, sending, you know, thumb drives, what, you know, camera raw files. You don't want these things going out. Bring it to a single location. Cloud is a good place for that. And then let people come and have the appropriate amount of access to it. I think one of the interesting fallacies is that air gap is more secure than being internet connected. And it's not true, because USB device, I can copy anything onto this. So, you know, unless your air gap environment is completely physically secure, and you're not letting people in with phones, you're not letting, you know, people in with stuff in their pockets, and you're walking through metal detectors and onto set, and, you know, your data center is fully locked down, like ours is, then, you know, without those capabilities in place, your air gap environment actually isn't any more secure. In fact, you may be less secure because you think that, oh, well, we're not connected to the internet, nothing is ever going to leak. And then, you know, maybe you have some downstream partner, like a Dover dubbing facility, that then doesn't have a firewall and leaks all your stuff anyway. So, you know, understanding what your risk environment is a big part of being able to lock it down. So, yeah, it's not really, it's not really a secure environment if it's configured wrong. And I don't want to lead people down a primrose path and say, oh, you know, cloud is just by its very nature more secure. There's certain benefits that you get because a cloud, you know, being run, say, in one of our data centers, you're getting the benefits of the 1,000 security engineers that we have working on the Azure platform. The fact that our data centers are audited by pretty much every organization on the planet. You know, there's DoD federal compliance. You know, if there's a standard out there, we're auditing to it. But it doesn't help if it's not configured properly. So, you know, even more than just, you know, a render workload, any workload that you're putting into the cloud, you have to have the same security considerations and the same risk assessments to make sure that you're understanding what you have, where you're going, who's using it, who's accessing it, and that you are designing a secure infrastructure with those things in mind. So we talked a little bit just of you know, where content is heading, and you know, I don't want to say that either doing on-prem is bad or that doing hybrid is bad, because you want to get the most out of what you've already bought. And a lot of people, a lot of big organizations, you know, whether it's Lucasfilm or Pixar or WB, everybody has render farms today. We're starting to see, you know, smaller shops in particular are dumping them. They're not going through the next upgrade cycle, and they're actually clearing out their server rooms and moving things into the cloud. Bad Robot did that. They don't have the ability to do on-premise rendering anymore. So that, you know, the decision is being made, but you can still bridge the gap by bursting to the cloud and still using your on-prem infrastructure.
You think about bursting to the cloud?
Yeah, so basically bursting is, I have a set amount of capacity on-prem, and I know, you know, I've got 400 server blades, you know, they're all dual proc, I have, you know, X number of cores, I've got X, you know, amount of memory and drive space. And, you know, someone ahead of me in line has a bigger render job, sucks up the entire thing, now I'm hosed, because there's no capacity left that I can use. But if you can burst, then what that means is that you have a single point of orchestration that will use up, you know, whatever portion of capacity you've been allotted by your local IT. Maybe that's the whole render farm, maybe it's only part of it. And then when you go over that, or your job needs to be done faster, or it's bigger, or, you know, it just has higher requirements, then the orchestration engine knows, well, I can connect to this service and I can provision more resources as needed. So that, you know, maybe I'm doing a 2-minute effects sequence, that would be, so, you know, roughly 24 times 120, you know, frames, and I need this back in 3 hours. I don't have the capacity on-prem, but the orchestration engine, I can set those parameters, and it'll go and find whatever, you know, the cloud resource associated with it is, and it'll burst that job into that capacity, and then when it's done, pulls the assets back, wipes out the VMs, and everything is done, so it's like it was never there. A whole lot cheaper and easier than having to roll out a bunch of new physical servers to handle the job. But we do need to heed the lessons of the past. you know, unfortunately, even the big studio content, probably 90% of, if not more, of the leaks that happen, like with Game of Thrones, it happens with a downstream partner. It's not a hack of the main studio's network. I think Sony was a little bit of an anomaly. But you know, like with Larson Studios, it happened because they were, you know, they had fully ready content. They were doing overdubbing, localization, but their environment kind of slipped through the cracks and did not have the security capabilities that it needed. And as a result, stuff was breached. So it's not just having the environment or knowing that you should secure it, but it's being able to go back and prove that what you've done has been done in the right way. So some of the things that we need to think about when bursting to cloud resources is, what's the capacity that you need? Because you don't want to end up in a situation where your 3D artists are just going hog wild and saying, wow, it'd be great if I could just try out this thing and render the entire film in one shot and get it back tomorrow morning, and then you get a bill for $3 million worth of compute time. That's you got to put some limits on stuff. But at the same time, there are deadlines. So you have to be able to understand what your deliverables are, what your capacity needs are, and then how to architect for that. This is why you'll want to look at the slide deck later. On-prem security, like I said at the outset, there's really not a whole lot of difference between the way that you're doing security today and the way that you have to do it in the cloud, because it's the same stuff. It's networks, it's virtual machines instead of physical servers running a host OS. It's still the same applications. You start getting into some differences with platform services or software as a service, where the cloud provider or the SaaS provider is giving you a capability. Then you've got some security differences you need to account for. But everything that you're doing today is applicable to the cloud. So access control, password management, encryption, monitoring and logging. These are all things that pretty much exactly the same way that you configure it on-prem today is how you should be doing it in the cloud.
Yeah. To some extent, wouldn't that be contingent upon the level of control or administration the cloud service organization is willing to give you if you're the client?
Actually, no. Because the fundamental premise of doing cloud, at least as far as we're concerned, is that you own your data. This environment, when you provision your environment, this is all yours. So we don't control access to that. Now, if you're talking about what's going on, like at the very foundation of the cloud infrastructure, so the physical asset, the cloud fabric, the way that the cloud resources are orchestrated to service customer accounts. Those are things that are abstracted from the customer. And you're right, you don't have control over that. We have control over that. But that's the benefit of the cloud, is that those first few layers of infrastructure, of the servers and networking, storage, power and cooling, management, updates, all that kind of stuff is happening under the covers so that you don't need to worry about that. But at the point where you're doing your infrastructure, your infrastructure services or your platform services, then that's where your control comes in. And then we're not doing that for you. That's your environment. That is where your security practices come into play. Does that answer the question, or we can talk after too? So in a hybrid model, really the only thing that is changing, from an air gap environment to doing cloud bursting, is that you have this additional capacity. And that means there is a connection. You need to stay private. You need to have the extended access controls. there's nothing unique to any particular cloud vendor when you're talking about this kind of a configuration. It's really just in what management tools you're using. How seamlessly will the orchestration engine leverage the cloud resources? But you need, it's now that you're going into a fully virtualized environment. So if your on-prem is like, you know, bare metal installed of operating system and application, and now you're moving to a virtualized environment, there's a little bit of a learning curve, because now you're dealing with a hypervisor and you're dealing with image hardening instead of, you know, physical server and asset hardening. So a few other things to think about, but it's all easily solved by doing things like having a consistent VM image that you're using, you know, using as your base node configuration. You know, using things like network security groups to define virtual networks. These are all things that you would do in your hardware in your on-prem environment, but it's now all going to be policy-based in a software-defined environment. So from a control perspective of the things to look for, and again, you can go back and read this later, think about the connection that you're using. You know, don't use unsecure protocols. Don't use unsecure cryptography. So, you know, SSL is pretty much a thing of the past at this point. Internally, but all of Azure systems run on TLS 1.2 or later, so it's a more secure crypto protocol. And you know, think about how you're doing your identity management and access control in particular. So have a single point of control for that. You know, whether it's on-prem and then you are synchronizing with your cloud identity, or if you're doing your identity management out of the cloud, you know, provide your users a single logon, and that's going to go a long way towards securing assets. Now, when we move to cloud native, and I was having this exact conversation with a fellow downstairs, the advantage that you get is that your assets never leave the cloud. So, you know, you start doing your texture definition and your modeling, and everything starts happening using the resources that you know, that are in your subscriptions. So you don't have to have desktops anymore. You can use a thin client, so something like Teradici, where it's a fully virtualized, you know, high-powered GPU-based environment that is just, you know, running through essentially through a web browser. When you go fully cloud native, you're only bringing people to the asset instead of sending the asset around. And even in a hybrid model, you're still going to have cases where, somebody's, you know, editing a scene, so they, you know, they need the latest version of this VFX. Well, we'll just put it on a USB and hand it to them. We really want that to be a thing of the past, not just because it's dangerous, but it's slow, and you know, that's where bad things happen. So if you can bring people to the content and grant access based on a common set of policies that you use in your on-premises environment and in your cloud, so many of these problems just magically go away. The right definition of policy and the right security protocols can make it so that you can do pretty much whatever you want in the cloud and not put your content at risk. So within Azure, there are four key areas to look at: virtual networking, Azure Batch, which is the processing engine, the orchestration for, so let's say you want to spin up 50,000 cores to do a batch rendering job, then Azure Batch does that. Resources are going to be your networking, storage, compute capabilities, and Key Vault is the in-cloud hardware-based key management. So it'll support either storing your key in the cloud, or you can bring your own key and just do token-based encryption through Azure services. So virtual networks, because I'm running out of time, just going to spin through these. Some considerations of, you know, definitely use a VPN, even if you've got a direct connect, a direct connection into the cloud, still use a VPN. The tax that you pay on encryption really is not that significant, and the benefit is very, very worth it. If you're dealing with multiple productions, create separate VNets, separate deployments for each environment. Use things like Azure Network Security Groups, which allow you to define, it's essentially policy-based software-defined networking. For a batch process, I think the key thing to pick out of here is you know, basically, I think the integrity checking is going to be that with the security validation is the most important part of the process, because through the integrity checking, then you know what's happening with your render job. You can get alerts back before you've spun up and done the entire process, and that way you're not going to waste your resources. Speaking of resources, there are pre-configured, or you know, there's secure configurations of both Linux and Windows servers that you can provision. So you know, if you're doing large-scale VM provisioning, then use something that's already as a known hardened environment. Use roles-based administration to control access. We'll skip over Keyvol because it's a little more complex. And just to recap, those are the services. And I can go into a lot more detail. We have a whole white paper on the subject. We actually also have some pre-scripted templates that are that will basically configure this hybrid environment for you with a lot of these security controls already enabled. So I can, I think there's a link in the deck that you can then connect to afterwards. So I'm sorry I had to go through this kind of quick. And, thank you.